This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Pete Dillon with you, and we have stirred the murky depths, the murky waters of food blogging and food writing. Does one opinion mean more than the other because that opinion is paid? Is accepting a free meal a bribe to write something favourable about it? And has the rise of new and digital media created a space where everybody can be a food critic? It's an interesting position. And MJ, I'm going to come back to you on this one. You've been writing around food for 7 or 8 years. Has the rise and rise of digital media meant a change in what you do?
Not necessarily what I do, I don't think. But I have seen a change in the way that restaurants conduct themselves. And I think it's coming back to what Ed was talking about and his services. Bloggers now are very much targeted for the opening nights, the big shebang. I think journalists have always been invited. I think that was a given. But I now see you'll go to an opening night or you'll go to that sort of introductory dinner or whatever it might be. And by and large, the bloggers will outweigh the journalists every time. And it's instantaneous media.
That's what I was going to ask. Are they there because of their Twitter following, or are they there because of their the social media power that they have, or influence, I shouldn't say power?
Yeah,
or are they there because...
I'd agree with that too. You definitely invite people because of that. But there again, you want diversity, so you'll bring different people in and you'll try and get away from the usual suspects too.
I think the key here is we're being very general about bloggers. There are so many different levels when it comes to blogging.
But anybody that's got an internet connection and an iPhone that can take a photo in a restaurant can now call themselves a blogger or call themselves a food critic and can have a financial impact on the success or not of a business. Nate, how many invites would you get in a week to attend the opening or a regular launch or something?
Right now?
Yeah.
Not many.
Not many?
No. And I don't know whether that's because of my past, whether I've stepped back to concentrate on university and the writing itself rather than, you know, spending all day on Twitter and writing blogs. So I guess that's the influence it has. So the moment I start, send a tweet or I start to put a blog up, that's it. All of a sudden, you're in a conversation again, and you're out there.
You're very lucky because, I mean, lots of bloggers, they'll get at least one invitation a day. And like, I've pretty much in the last 2 or 3 years given up blogging because of my conflicts having clients, and I don't want to go out and write about a Spanish restaurant and give them a bad review when I've got a couple of clients who are Spanish restaurants.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've been gunning for a long time to write for the Good Food Guide.
Yeah.
Which, MJ, that's one of the things that you do as a professional. And I've been told year in, year out that they would not employ me to write for the Good Food Guide because I work in public relations.
Well, this brings us to a very interesting point, doesn't it? The dumpling story.
The dumpling story.
So there was a recently, if you read Good Food Epicure, there was a story about dumplings, dumpling restaurants, and a young journalist was invited to write that story. Mm-hmm. That same young journalist also consulted to one of the restaurants that was mentioned there, David's, which I have too myself, actually, I should declare. Mm-hmm. And there was meant to be that the editor specifically wanted that journalist to write about David's, and you have to if you write about. The disclosure that she consulted was left off. Now, the question is, should somebody who's doing publicity be writing for a food guide or a food section when there are so many people out there who don't have conflicts?
It's opening a can of...
a massive can.
It does. Somebody's joining us on the phone there, Ed. This is the two of you have had a bit of a, I won't say a stout, but there's been some declarations in the week. Nick Crilly Hargrave, also known as Sharking for Chips and Drinks, joins us from the Gold Coast. Nick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Are you feeling aggrieved that you've become the target of people's wrath?
I would say, yeah, we've definitely been a target of a couple of people. Definitely throwing the headlights on, I would say.
Do you think it's justified that the headlights were put on you, given the circumstances? And let's try and frame that discussion very quickly. It's been suggested, alleged, call it what you will, that you writing reviews positively about somebody that you worked for was what got people offside. Is that fair?
I wouldn't say that's fair. It's quite upsetting that sort of you've been misrepresented in that way. The reviews that we had done were done previous to any type of employment with Paul Mathis. So yeah, we can see sort of where people are looking at it from, but having all the facts at hand is a different thing altogether.
So put it on the plate, Nick. Let's make it very, very clear. What was the situation? You wrote some reviews about Paul, venues that were owned by Paul Mathis.
Yeah, so we wrote a couple of reviews of some venues of Paul Mathis, and then probably about 6 months later, there was a job that I applied for and got it there. So, and we didn't go back, and obviously we didn't retract any of the reviews because they were written off the basis of the reviews at the time. So, and then once that's happened, we've moved on from there.
Can you understand people's question of your ethics that you took a job, or you were lucky enough to get a job with Paul Mathis, given that you had written such favourable reviews?
Yes, but that was... I hadn't been in the hospitality industry at all, and there was never any... I was never looking for a job in the hospitality industry. So if reviewers have then got to start thinking about what they're reviewing and what could be happening in the next 6, 12, 24 months, then what's the point of having a chat about all this?
Well, there is a point, because we're trying to get to a point where we're trying to clear some of the water. It's very murky, and in a lot of regards, and I'm not just directing this at you, Nick, don't get me wrong. There are a great many people who, one in particular who I could point to, who I'm not going to name, but who is a blogger, has been a blogger, has occasional freelance pieces in The Age, and is somebody who has, on numerous occasions that I know of, accepted a free meal and has then written about them. And so we're getting to a question, and this is for all of you, all four of you. Where does the line stop when you are from being a blogger and somebody who accepts freebies and blogs about them, to being a journalist that will go to a venue and review it on more than one occasion before generally writing about it? And that's, MJ, a point that I want to get to you with. Mm. You'll generally visit a venue more than once before you write about it, and will not. And that's usually paid for by your employer.
It is. Look, it's really clear for us because we're bound by the code of ethics. So there are just so many things that we can't do. We have to fact check. We have to speak to the chef. We have to go back and try and speak to the manager or the restaurateur. We have to be right across all levels, and we can't accept a free meal. It's I think from my point of view, from a journalist point of view, it is just so clear what we can and cannot do. You know, bloggers, it's been uncharted territory, and so that's why this discussion is so interesting now, because we're kind of getting to the nuts and bolts of what we can and can't do in that sphere.
Should there be a code of ethics for bloggers?
Yes.
Is there a necessity for disclosure?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would disagree, because you're dealing with hobbyists mostly. I mean, if you look at a blog called The Last Appetite, he recently posted something very interesting. It's now, in the US, bloggers are employing the journalists because blogs have become that big and that professional. So it's all changing. But it depends. If you're just a person who's going out and Instagramming some pictures of food, or if you're just writing something, you want to be aware of the issues, but you don't need ethics. Now,
of course you need ethics. You don't need an ethical code like the journalists have. There has to be an ethical code. Otherwise, there is a complete lack of transparency. Yeah. It can be called nepotism.
And
there has to be this has to be at the absolute least disclosure.
Well, you're toying with people's livelihoods. They're writing about restaurants. They're critiquing restaurants. People are reading these blogs, and they are visiting based on the criticism or the positive
otherwise,
or the negative of what they have written. So, yes, I think that they need to be bound by a code of ethics of sorts.
Nath, do you agree?
Absolutely.
And do you agree in the necessity for disclosure?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. I also judge how can someone walk into a surgery, see a surgeon operating, say that's not correct. How can someone who's got time to write a WordPress Open up a WordPress site and then go and pick on chefs and waiters, and without any qualifications. Mm. They're not journalists. They're not chefs. They've just got an opinion.
99. I mark it, and I've got no qualms with bloggers. I'm a blogger. I'm an ex-journalist. 99.9% of the time, there's no one doing anything wrong. Also, most bloggers nowadays are aware of this, and they do disclose when they've gone and they've eaten a free meal or at a free event like this other one I held the other night. They also, journalists, they might not take a free meal, but let's look at the events that we go to for just drinks, because a restaurant's launching. And I can remember being at drinks events together with you.
Absolutely, yeah.
And likewise with me, Ed, including when I was at ABC.
I've been to a 10th birthday party for a restaurant last year, and Larissa Dubecki was there and received their hospitality, and she would be the reviewer who would review their restaurant at some point.
But wouldn't there be disclosure at that point
that
she was a guest of the restaurant previously? And I know that anything that's been written by Larissa that may even have by sheer mention Pope Joan, of which her yeah. husband is a partner in that business, there has always been disclosure. Nick, I know, and it's probably difficult for you sitting there on the other end of the phone while the four of us are in the studio. Do you believe that there must be disclosure?
Yeah, I would say, we've got to a stage where we need that, that transparency across the board. And like what sort of Ed was saying there as well, that, everyone, bloggers, journalists, have all gone to these events, and it's coming to that stage is you've got to ask yourself, do you have to be turned on at all times to then, if you're Instagramming something, every single Instagram and tweet and any post you put on anything else has to have some sort of element of disclaimer.
Okay, then we're going to need to have whole bit of workshopping on what's the potential hashtag for that. It's 26 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. We are going to have to play some messages. We'll come back with Nick on the phone on the Gold Coast, Nathan Miller, Mary Jane Daffy and Ed Charles to continue this discussion. But I'd love to hear from you, 0427 Joy 949. You can send an SMS or you can tweet cravings_Joy949 if you're near your laptop on air at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
The Twitter sphere, my friends, is going crazy because we have in the studio Ed Charles, Tomatom. We have journalist Mary Jane Daffy. We have on the Gold Coast, Nick Crilly Hargraves, and we also have Nathan Miller. I'm making the declaration again in case you didn't hear at the top of the show. Nathan is my partner, but independently is a chef and food writer studying writing at university as well. We've got some tweets, and I want to put those on the table first. From Sticky Fingers, a self-regulating industry body such as the Advertising Standard Boards could take on blogger ethics to avoid misleading posts. Michael Hopkinson has said, let's be honest, only food bloggers care about food bloggers, an interesting point of view. Young Mel, MJ is spot on. It's not about you, the writer, and what you get. It's about your readers and whether you're being honest with them. And Mary Jane Daffy, who's in the studio, is tweeting at the same time, inviting people to get involved with the discussion. I want to move on to a couple of topics where I think that there is a similarity. The first is travel writing. So if you accept a junket to Kazakhstan to write and you're expected to come back and write something positive about your Kazakhstani experience on the Black Sea, that it is the new Dubrovnik, are you then doing your reader a disservice, MJ?
Yeah, I think so. But generally, with for meals of any sort, I've done travel writing for many years now as well. In my experience,
Are you having trouble with your mic there, Darl?
In my experience, you're not expected necessarily to write a positive. It's not really a review, but a positive piece.
Or a positive overview about your experience.
Exactly. You're given, say, the flights. Let's talk about Tasmania. You're given the flights to Tasmania.
Go down to Mona.
Yep, you put up to Mona. You go to the whiskey distillery. You get a lovely night's accommodation. What you write is completely up to you, and that is common knowledge to most PR companies as well. It's kind of a bit of a gamble.
It is a gamble. Nate, you also travel, right?
Yes.
Would you take a free flight to Zimbabwe to write about a national park on the expectation that it's a good piece?
If they only wanted a good piece, no, I wouldn't take it.
Okay. I want to put another thing in front of you, because I know this. You've been wrestling with this for a long time. You ate at a Michelin-starred restaurant in Bangkok. the day before the San Pellegrino Awards were announced. You'd had other dining experiences in the same city of the same ilk.
Mm-hmm.
And you've still struggled to this day to write a piece about the visit to that restaurant. Why so?
It's hard because you, at the moment, I'm doing some personal investigation into how these places are critiqued, who critiques, and that's quite clear here in Australia after some research. But the San Pellegrino do not disclose who does their critiquing and stuff. So therefore, it's that grey area that we have in the industry again, where we don't know who's saying all these nice and fluffy things. The restaurant itself was okay food. It was good service. It's definitely not number one in Asia, or number 32 in the world.
And it has just been voted number one in Asia. So, and we're talking about NAM. I mean, you can't hide that, yeah, David Thompson, a strange ship. Got another an SMS from Dean in Northcote, who has said, "What an odd comment. Everybody needs an ethical code. Why would bloggers be exempt from ethical concerns?" How would you answer that, Nick?
Sorry, I missed that one.
Sorry, I'm just reading an SMS. "What an odd comment. Everybody needs an ethical code. Why would bloggers be exempt from ethical concerns?" Would you keep writing, Nick, you and Helen, your partner, would you keep writing if you had to sign off and subscribe to a code of ethics or a standard that was perhaps put together by, and I'm just trying to find, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, if you had to sign off as a blogger on a piece of paper that was a legal document that required an ethical code or a code of conduct, would you sign off or would you just stop writing?
No, I think we'd absolutely sign off for it. I think almost every blogger probably would, because it's more important about having your honesty about the experience, and that's what we've always given. So, yeah, that's no problem or cause for concern at all.
Ed, would you sign off on a similar code?
I just think it's a ridiculous prospect. I would have no problem signing off on it because I have a personal ethical code anyway. And I think we hope that people do have those things. I think this thing has come about, and the reason I wrote what I wrote and everybody else about Nick is because we've been going through a grey area, and it's only in the last 2 years that people have started disclosing things. And most people do subscribe to it.
Mm.
They really do.
But a code of ethics comes from your journalistic background, Faith, yourself and MJ. So you have that, and I'm going through that at uni at the moment in second year.
Sure.
It's a large part of ethics as a journalist.
Within that ethical code, look what's happened. Look at phone hacking.
Yeah.
You know?
I knew the Murdoch Empire would get a mention at some moment.
It's a really tough area. And, you know, I think, Nick, you were saying that every Instagram, every tweet, I sometimes go in there and I make the choice that I'm going to take a picture of a bit of food that's a client's piece of food when there's an event. But it's just sometimes it's fast moving. You can't disclose every tweet. You try and be as transparent as you are. You put it on your blog, you put it on your company, you know. I've actually really haven't been writing the last 2 and 3 years because I've found the same sort of conflicts as Nathan. Mm. I find it tortures me because I can't write what I want to write when I go, oh, but I've got a competitor and I'm going to look bad.
So at what point do we draw the line, myself included in this, because of I've been presenting this program for nigh on 5 years. If I ate at a restaurant, the Point at Albert Park, I've had numerous meals at the Point at Albert Park, and I haven't paid for them all. And
same
so
here.
If every time I have an issue that requires discussion that may or may not include the Point at Albert Park, is it necessary for me to disclose that I have once or twice in the past eaten there? It's the same. I was at Donovan's last Friday night as a guest of Donovan's for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Had a great time. And I sat on a table with some other journalists. So next time I happen to mention Donovan's because we've got a story about St Kilda Beach, am I obliged to mention them because I have at once eaten at their table without charge?
This is the tough thing, isn't it? And it goes back to what I said about, are you critiquing something or just writing about something? Yeah. And often travel writing, like we're talking about the Famils, where nowadays, by the way, they do decide who to invite by their Twitter followings, and they do ask, and I've been asked to guarantee footage and not coverage and not gone to places. And this is the same thing with Instagramming as well. Like when I went to a particular pub in Fitzroy, it was a sort of critique when I Instagrammed their food because it happened to look like a dog turd. And that's unfortunate for them.
I'm glad we're not mentioning the pub, but because we'll be up for a lawsuit.
Yeah, and when you take a beautiful picture of somebody's food and it's put out there, that is a critique as well, because you're actually showing something in a favourable light. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to make it look artistic.
Everything you do on social media is.
I was at a certain pop-up last night on St Kilda Beach doing that. I've got no association with them. Yeah, I have been to a couple of free lunches there and to the men's dinner and stuff. But, you know, I was just there with friends showing that I was on St Kilda Beach in the sunshine. There's no effort to try and trick anybody or anything like that. And I think it was perfectly ethical.
We've actually made somebody add their thing. I've got Mark from West Footscray has sent, and hello, Mark from West Footscray, because you're in our hood. I follow the Footscray food blog and on occasion take Lauren Wombok's recommendations. I have no idea if she gets free meals or not. I looked at the website and it's not declared as far as I can see. You've made me question what is happening. Should she plainly declare that she does or does not accept any free meals? I think, Mark, if we've made you think, there are probably dozens of others who are not sending an email to ask the same question.
I think, can I just
By all
butt
means.
In, Pete? I think there, again, it goes back to what I was saying right at the start. Mark obviously really likes Lauren's
blog.
Yeah, Lauren's blog.
It's a great blog, the Footscray Food Blog.
It's
great blog.
Good.
Yeah, excellent. And so, you know, he's obviously been to a lot of the recommendations that she's put out there, that she's blogged about. You know, if he agrees with what she is writing, if he goes on her recommendations and enjoys the experience, he should keep reading that and following that. And that, again, it's a little bit subjective as well. Sometimes a reviewer, a blogger, whatever you might want to call them, if you decide that they're like-minded food-wise, then go right ahead. Follow them.
Nick, I'm going to ask each of the four of you in this the four of you involved in the conversation, have you ever approached a venue and asked for a freebie?
No, never have.
No.
Only things like kitchens, trips abroad.
Big things.
BMW. Big things.
Aston Martin.
Well, I mean, again, this.
I'd like a car.
Wouldn't we all?
And I wonder whether car ride, people who are motoring enthusiasts who write about motoring and motoring journalists, whether they have access to cheaper or better or even free cars because of by virtue of what they do.
They certainly get lent cars.
They do. Yeah. And that's...
Are they lent cars for review purposes to drive the car for a couple of weeks so that they can form an opinion to write a piece, or are they in fact lent the car because of what they write about? Again, we're looking into some very murky water.
It is very murky, and they pretty much have a different car which they'd have for a couple of weeks throughout the year, to the point that you wouldn't even need a car. Wine writers.
We're just going to keep hitting our heads.
Yeah, I mean, wine writers are sent wine.
I think off the back of that, depending on sort of what industry the writers are from, the bloggers or the journalists are always going to be offered freebies, but it always will come back about the honesty of the experience and building and the audience who trusts you and likes you the way you... And what Mary Jane was saying, that, yeah, your audience likes you on social media and the way that you write, and they'll follow you off the back of that.
So my next question before we go to another break, is there... are your social media portals, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, so forth and so on, are they extensions of your blog? Therefore, do they require disclosure, Nick?
I would say to a point they are, but it's usually it's social media. It's what you think your followers are interested in, whether what you're having, where you're going, and I think that's sort of what those extra sort of arms are. They're not directly linked to the blog. It's more the social element.
But would you have them without the blog? Would you have the volume of followers that you have without your blog?
Absolutely.
You think? Mm. Nath, would you have the amount of followers on your social media were it not for your blog?
No.
Ed, would you...
Same thing. I mean, slightly different, but the top bloggers spend more time promoting their blogs through these things, so that you can't separate them.
It's a tool, and it's all going to fall under the same umbrella.
My blog's about my email list. It's about my. It's about everything. It's about Twitter followers.
Now your vibrator's going vibrator. Off. I just want to read a couple of tweets before we move on. Christina, Hungry Australia, obviously a blogger. I don't do reviews. I write honestly about my experiences. Number two, I disclose all. Number three, I write what I want. And number four, I sleep fine. David Carruthers, many would know him from Dogs Bar in St Kilda. Third world problems are fine, aren't they? Great debate, Pete. Thank you, DC. Young Mel, I think the point's missed with Ed Stokehouse's example. It's not about the writer's intentions. It's about the impression created for the reader. Yes, there is a... And we'd like you to get involved and send us yours. Cravings underscore joy 949 is the Twitter handle. You can get in touch that way. You can send an SMS 0427 joy 949. You can email on air at joy.org.au, or you can tweet either Ed, Mary Jane, or Nathan if you follow them. Oh, and Nick, who's there on the Gold Coast lashing about on the beach, I would hope, with a gin and tonic in his hand. We'll be back very shortly. I'm going to play another track. The first track you heard that kicked off the show, of course, was called Dirty Cash. This one might be in a similar vein. It's 17 minutes to two.
Joy 94.9.
Oh, that song's just going to go for too long. It's got another 3 minutes. That's Free by Rudimental. And the reason we're playing that, of course, is because we are talking about freebies and all of that, and blogging and whether you should accept them, and transparency. And it seems we've hit a chord. There's a lot of comment on the Twitter sphere, including this one. I think Ed Charles driven at you. Stop driving me to dinosaur media. I'm now listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9. Thank you, Simon Kirby. We don't know who you are, but you should listen every week, because I can tell you it's a remarkable program and there are no freebies that are going anywhere for me to say that.
Well, I know who Simon is.
Good.
I think he owes me a drink.
A free now, drink. Now he's soliciting for free beverages.
But did he just disclose that he's getting a free drink? That's the question.
And look, this, you know, we've got Nick's on the phone in the Gold Coast joining us for the remainder of this show. We've got about 6 minutes to go and we'd still be interested to hear your thoughts. 0427 Joy 949. Send an SMS through to that number. You can email on air at joy.org.au, or you can tweet Ed, Mary Jane, Nick or Nath or myself. You know all of the Twitter handles by now if you've been listening for any amount of time. Look, I think we've got to be able to leave this discussion with some clarity and have gotten to a point where we can say that this is where we should be. We've talked about a code of ethics. In some senses, there was somebody suggested the Australian Advertising so-and-so should have the standards. How hard would those standards be policed? And Nick, I won't start with Nick, I'll start with you, Nath. If you got told to take down one of your blogs because it was seen as a fluff piece and somebody had known that you had been at a venue, would you take it down?
Yes.
Even though you've made the very clear decision not to blog about free events?
If there's anything on there now, which I'm going to put it on the table now, I took 6 pieces down off my blog this week that were written 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
When I first started blogging, and you know, it was a free event and it was a great night and I had a ball and I did write, it was my own personal feelings, I wasn't influenced by anything, it was a great night and I wrote about it. I sort of question that now, and after a couple of years at university, and I question my own set of ethics that I have, and I'm rewriting those as I go along now. So that's...
Nick, would you take down a blog post if the Advertising Standards Board said this looks like it contravenes a potential code of ethics we're writing? Would you take it down?
I would have a look at the piece, and I'd probably debate it back and forth for a little while, because I'd be interested if anyone can claim that, like, if they don't pay for a meal, does it render you completely unable to distinguish good food from bad or a good experience from bad?
No, I don't think it does. I think that's an entirely separate question. Whether or not the quality of the meal is probably irrelevant in the discussion. MJ, if you've written a piece and you were asked to retract something within a piece because it could be considered a conflict of interest or a lack of judgment, would you do it?
I've never been in the situation. It's hard to say. I don't think I'd write the piece to begin with. I think that I just wouldn't write it. If there was a conflict of interest or I thought that I would. It was murky waters, or in the pit of my stomach, I knew that it wasn't right. I just wouldn't write it. I wouldn't review it. It's as simple as that. And in fact, for a lot of the places, you know, we have to declare any conflicts of interest before we actually go in and review. So it's
but
not.
Then I want to put it another way, Ned. I want to get you to answer this question as well. Let's assume your name is Matt Preston or John Lethlean, And in the time when Matt Preston was reviewing and John Lethley and still is reviewing, two people considered senior reviewers in the industry. John Lethley and Matt Preston know by sight and name pretty much every chef worth their salt in this city and elsewhere. So if John Lethley was to see Ben Shuri in the street and say, "G'day, Ben, how's tricks? I haven't seen you for a while. Like, last caught up with you in Noosa and we had a beer." And John Lethley then reviews Attica. Isn't that the same situation that we were talking about, that there is a potential conflict because they know them? And I mean, by virtue of what we do, I know a shitload of chefs in Melbourne. Does that mean that my credibility or my integrity is compromised if I have them on this show? So it's something to think about.
It's, let's face it, when you're writing in a high profile position, which I've been, and I'm a high profile blogger and Pete's high profile, they know us. Mm. And you go out to certain places and you get the odd free drink, you get the odd bit of free food, they come and chat to you. You know, I've said hi to Andrew McConnell in the street, can I be independent? And that is the big question. I think actually they don't have the same experience as that punter who's come out from Narre Warren for that once a year big meal.
Let's just be careful that we're not being geographically elitist.
But I'm just saying, if you're coming in once a year and you go for a big meal for an anniversary and you're spending $300, $400, $500 and you're expecting that top experience and you go to Vue Demand, Attica, or wherever it is, and you go there, you're probably not going to get the same experience as anyone who's well known. Just simply because you're a normal person, and you might
that's saying the rest of us are abnormal.
This isn't, my girlfriend is now sitting outside the window. She goes for meals with a friend of hers, and she's had terrible experience at some places, which I'm not going to name. But it's, you know, it's very different experiences to what I've had.
Yep.
Nick, you are recognised by some in the industry. Do you get favourable treatment where your face is recognised?
If anything, we will get the chef or the front of house manager might come out and just have a chat with us. But anything opposed from that, I think we're still quite low profile, really.
Nath, do you get stuff for free?
No, not
do
really.
Do people attempt to give you stuff for free?
No. Because I'm not known by Nathan Miller. My handle is Rambling Relish. My food blog is Rambling Relish. So if I was Nathan Miller and I was associated with a photo or a picture, I guess that may be different. That might be the same with you, Nick, because it's the brand that people may know. Mm. They may not know the people behind.
One of
the
problems with Nick is that we don't have a decent photo of him to give chefs. So if you could get us a
now
decent
we're
photo, Nick.
Personal attacks won't carry any leverage.
If Rambling Relish has got one,
we have some terrific ones of John Lethlean.
Yes.
We've got some nice collection of delicious with Becky, but not you.
MJ, do people try and give you stuff?
Oh, no. No, not really.
Or do people try and cajole you into visiting their premises because they know you did.
Oh, look, I think in a joking way, but I'm always pretty flippant about it all. And there's a wonderful book, actually, that Ruth Roykel, the ex-New York Times restaurant reviewer, wrote, if anyone's interested. And it's a fabulous book. I can't remember the title of it, but it details how she went and dressed up as all different sorts of characters in order to go and review various restaurants in New York. And I always think about that when I get asked, oh, you know, do people recognise you? Well, no, I don't think so. I don't look like, I don't know what I
You'd be surprised how many pictures of you there are on the backs of kitchen doors. It is time to wrap up this discussion, and so now comes the time to be completely not transparent and give us your website if you want people to read what you're writing. Nick, if people want to look for you, they can find you at?
You can find the blog at Sharking for Chips and Drinks, which is named after the Mike Skinner street song. Twitter at Shark for Chips Drinks. And you can also find that on Instagram as well.
And I think people can go to their favourite search engine, type in Sharking for Chips and Drinks, and they'll probably find you. Nick, thank you for joining us from the Gold Coast.
Thank you very much, Pete.
Cheers. Cheers. Hope we've cleared the air there. Rambling Relish, where will people find you?
At www.ramblingrelish.com.
And on Twitter?
At Rambling Relish.
Excellent. Ed Charles?
Tomatom on Twitter or tomatom.com on the web.
And Mary Jane Daffy, people will find you at Mary Jane Daffy on Twitter. Where can they read your work?
Great Ocean. It's a fabulous new publication coming out of Torquay and Port Fairy, based around the ocean, Royal Auto, Epicure, Fairfax.
She's pretty much everywhere. She does. Look, thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week with another program. It's been interesting to at least start this discussion. I don't think we've got anywhere near the end of it. And it will, as long as people have a mobile phone and an internet connection, will continue. If you've been interested, you can always send an email to cravings@joy.org.au. Well, that's it for another week for me. Thank you to Mary Jane, to Ed, to Nathan, to Nick. Great show, and I think a great bit of discussion that we can carry on with down the track. Thank you to you for listening and your interaction. And stay tuned now. The folks are going to take you travelling on Escape Pod, and I'm sure an interesting cast of guests, followed by the lovely boys from Fender Bender. What a week to be on Fender Bender with the Grand Prix happening. And following that, of course, there is Little Fish, Chappelle, and a great night of entertainment taking you into your Saturday night. Have a great weekend. I'll be back next weekend. This has been Craving. Stay tuned now for Escape Pod.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.